Welcome to the Infotagen podcast, hosted by me, Damien Collins. For our special Inside Europe series, today we'll be looking at the politics of Bulgaria. And I'm joined by our guest, Kalina Boncheva, who is Professor of Text Analytics at the University of Sheffield. And she works in particular on text analysis and summarization of social media. She's Bulgarian by birth, and much of her research work is focused on Bulgaria and the Balkans. I'm also joined from Bulgaria by Angel Petrov, a reporter for Denevnik, a reporter on the Foreign Affairs Desk for that journal, and also covering politics in Bulgaria and the Balkans. We're recording the show on the 2nd of November, ahead of a Bulgarian presidential election in less than 2 weeks. Angel, I'd like to ask you for your insights on the election itself. But to start off with, Kalina, in this series, we've really focused on the increasing role of social media in politics. And I wonder if you could give us some context to the way social media plays a role in the politics of a country like Bulgaria as a forum for debate and discussion, and whether, as we've seen in other parts of Europe, it also drives a polarizing effect amongst voters.
Thank you, Damien. It's a real honor to be here today. And yes, indeed, social media is playing a very significant role in the democratic process in Bulgaria, not just elections, but a lot wider. And indeed, there is a lot of external influence in that regard. So it by no means it's like a closed, siloed infosphere. Civil society organizations such as the Center for Study of Democracy, for example, in collaboration also with GlobSec, have looked at, amongst other things, like Russian influence in the social media sphere, and compared, for example, Facebook narratives between March, April last year, 2020, and the same period this year. And some interesting insights from there is that exactly like last year, of course, the focus was on the pandemic and the political aspects of that. But this year, for example, there is a new dimension that is more about pro-Russian narratives, glorifying the former communist past and the communist ruler of Bulgaria. Also now it's starting to pick up, from which I'm sure Angel can comment a lot more in relation to the election and pro-Russian sort of narratives and connections to the Socialist Party and that side of the election. So the Bulgarian Socialist Party, which is actually a sort of ancestor to the Bulgarian Communist Party that ruled until 1989. The Bulgarian Socialist Party has since then been a very ardent proponent of closer ties to Russia, as well as other related allies. Another dimension is that, there is a lot of uncertainty and infighting also in the social media sphere between different political parties, members of parliament and politicians in general. So that has led to a lot of sort of mistrust in the citizens many of them. In fact, one of the recent polls that I came across, again from CSD and GlobSec, a fact sheet on Bulgaria in 2021, was that only 33% trust the government, and then only 48% trust the mainstream media. So the main source of influence and information for vast majority of people are not mainstream media. Facebook is a major player there, but also some other so-called media outlets that are less clear in terms of ownership and political agenda. It's quite a complex picture. Unsurprisingly, of course, we have situation that based on these discussions on social media, there's been a lot of anti-vaccine, for example, narratives, a lot of COVID conspiracies that have been gaining traction. And these have been linked up quite closely also to different aspects of government and trying to undermine government actions. But also conspiracy theories imported from abroad, not just Russia. Some of them also from America, specifically in relation to the vaccine and COVID.
Do you see any crossover between disinformation around COVID and more extreme political opinion or Russian-backed narratives around politics in Bulgaria? Because I think we're seeing in other countries, often you get networks of groups and accounts that move from one subject to another wherever they think they can, you know, create tension and drive division.
So I haven't myself looked that much into these sort of far right or extreme right narratives and groups on Facebook in Bulgaria. These are indeed starting to gain traction as well, but it's not an area that I've looked at. In the area of vaccination and related matters, I've looked primarily in Facebook groups that are specifically dedicated to vaccines and COVID. So there's names like the hoax COVID-19, or there's also interplay between those and like the conspiracy about the 5G networks, for example. So there, it's been there has been an primarily imported narratives, if you like. So information, false narratives propagated by, for example, false narratives propagated around like the nurse Tiffany Dyer passing out after her injection of her vaccine from America and elsewhere. But there's also some there are cases where false narratives have been propagated by politicians themselves. So recently, Fact Check Bulgaria published a fact check correcting a live Facebook transmission where the former Prime Minister Boyko Borisov said that some Bulgarians were administered COVID vaccines past their use by date, which has been debunked. Again, there's a lot of cases where the politicians themselves, but also some medical doctors, the most prominent one being a doctor called Mangurov, they have been propagating a lot of sort of doubts about the efficacy of vaccines, the efficacy of wearing masks. And all of that, of course, is going on against the backdrop of a government, which is interim government appointed by the president in the absence of a majority democratically elected government, which is why there is yet another election. This is going to be the third this year. So it's a big instability. And in between all this, it's hardly surprising, for example, that only 20% of the population of Bulgaria is fully vaccinated so far. Because yes, it's a very complicated interplay between politicians, doctors, and foreign narratives and conspiracy theories.
That's very interesting. I want to bring Angel in a second in, but do you think that people's reluctance to get the vaccine is a consequence of the amount of disinformation around the vaccine that exists in Bulgaria?
Yes, I definitely think so. I mean, it's not a surprising fact that we looked at disinformation all the way up to March this year. And a lot of it is like 97% of all the disinformation that we found on Facebook was not actually debunked, even though some of it, as I said, originated from foreign narratives, like around this nurse. That's to do with the fact that until recently, there were no fact checkers in Bulgaria. So Facebook, which is reliant quite heavily on fact checkers being present on its platform to help surface and flag misinformation, that wasn't the case. So only recently, AFP fact check started operating in Bulgaria, I think from around January this year. And similarly for factcheck.bg, they are also a new undertaking from the Association of European Journalists in Bulgaria. So all of that, I think, like when the pandemic started in 2020, Bulgaria is really like the wild east of misinformation, especially on Facebook.
Yeah. And I think, as you said before, I think something really important that in this series has come up in other countries where I think there are worrying increases in the amount of disinformation is there's the growing rise of disinformation on social media platforms like Facebook. And at the same time, a decline in trust in traditional media as well, where which in the past may have helped to debunk some of those myths.
Yeah, exactly. So at the moment, that's the problem, that the vast majority of the population actually is not reaching towards the mainstream media as a source of authoritative information. So even though now there are some fact checkers and efforts to debunk and so on, these efforts are not necessarily reaching the audience that they're meant to reach. It's kind of slightly different situation to the to a country like the UK, where people do have still relatively high trust in the BBC and other mainstream media and are turning to them for verification of what they're writing. But again, as I said, it's not helped by the fact that the politicians and the doctors themselves are getting prime time TV spots. Mm. So for example, there was a recent debate on Nova TV that was involving this Dr. Mangerov as well as another expert. And, you know, you have a primetime TV program where you have a doctor that is voicing, distrust in the fact that masks work. So, you know, against that backdrop, it's really hard for the citizens to really find who to trust and where to go.
Absolutely. Angel Petrov, I wonder if you could start us off by giving us a bit of an insight into the forthcoming election. There have been a lot of elections in Bulgaria this year. But what do you think is at stake in this presidential election?
Well, first of all, I think I need to add something to what Kalina just said, because it's really, as she also said herself, it's a really complex entanglement between this health crisis, between the political crisis, between different actors trying to convey messages both online and offline. Of course, the vaccines do play a certain part. The fact that there was this ambiguity in both the previous and both under the previous government, Borisov's government, and the two caretaker governments that followed suit, composed by the President Roman Radev and headed by Prime Minister Stepan Yanev, both kinds of executive authorities basically failed to convey the proper messages to organize a coherent information campaign, a coherent vaccine pro-vaccination campaign that could actually persuade people. It was good to get a shot on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, it's not really sure if it would have worked for a very simple reason. Several polls have showed over time that Bulgarians don't really trust their institutions. Imagine if in an environment where trust in the institutions is at a record low for Europe, imagine in this environment you have people who look at the media as agents of the government, of the status quo, of, you know, I'm talking about media who promote messages like not like the ones we see on social media, these strong messages emitted about people who died from a vaccine, for example. And they see some kind of a collusion, if I may use this word, and it's very easy to fall for it. The problem is that in this environment, now that you have the election, because you've asked me about the election, there is this competition in a space that was previously reserved to people who would speak of nationalism, of ties, very good ties with Russia, of traditional values. Of course, you also see that. But much of this space is now filled by people who speak against getting vaccines. And you can see a huge number of players, especially marginal players. just competing over this niche, just to get 1 or 2% or whatever, just to get a subsidy in parliament. They compete to shout in front of each other, I am more anti-vaxxer than you are, or I don't want to oblige people to get COVID certificates, because now we have those COVID certificates to enter public venues like elsewhere in Europe. So the election is not dominated by that really, but it is a very important issue, especially because since the number is very low of people who have taken a shot, you can clearly see the numbers of those infected and of COVID deaths per 24 hours skyrocketing. In this context, it's very difficult to actually avoid misinformation and disinformation online, and political actors are part of it. Because you asked Kalina about Russia earlier, I do think that Russia plays a certain role in this. I can't really point out the actors it is using, although there are actors such as this party called Vozrazhdane, which many critics point out as the new tool of Russian influence, because they reject. They present as a package of values everything that previously mostly staunchly pro-Russian parties would offer to voters. All these traditional values, anti-EU stuff, anti-migrant stuff, anti-LGBT, and now we have to decide on for ourselves. Of course, this COVID stuff they're imposing on us is like slavery. We have to rid ourselves of it. The few protests that were organized, I mean, really massively attended protests in Bulgaria against be it the lockdown. We only had a partial lockdown, though. Be it against the partial lockdown or any COVID measures or vaccines, were mostly staged by this Vozrazhdane party. So, of course, you have all the wild speculations, and sometimes not really corroborated, but you could hear a lot of talk about them, for example, acting as agents of Russian influence. Many people, however, just fall for this information online and repost it. That doesn't make them tools of Russian influence. This just makes them confuse people. Also, it's really important, I think, to point out about the role of this information in people not really getting a shot is important. But I think we should still look at this classical concept called 5 C's. Sorry, I can't recite them by heart, but of course you have the complacency, communication, context. We have a situation where I mentioned the government has failed, several governments in a row, two caretaker governments and Borisov government have failed to communicate the need to do this. You have the context, you have people who have been vulnerable to this disinformation and susceptible to it because of their socioeconomic status, for example. There was a period where vaccines weren't available also. So it's I think we should look at it as a whole. And there are, of course, people who are naturally hesitant because of the lack of proper assurance on behalf of official institutions. You can imagine that also if doctors, because doctors are also split, if doctors are divided over whether a vaccine should be taken or not, and if you go to your GP and he or she tells you, oh, this is dangerous, you'll die, of course you won't want to get the vaccine. Not necessarily because you trust your GP, but because he or she told you, you will die. It sounds creepy. If we move just more firmly to the election, I must say that since over the past years, I've been writing about Bulgaria mostly for foreign language media and organizations, I have this knack of just doing it on a more comparative basis. I'm not as pessimistic as perhaps many interlocutors that you might hear, because Bulgaria, unlike other countries in the Balkans, is gradually maybe it's not a one-way street, maybe this could change, but still, I think it's emerging of a really stability-critic situation where you had one domineering actor. The fact that you don't have this actor, the government of Mr. Borisov, is healthy for democracy. The fact that other players compete, because there are several of them, for this spot of being the new kingmaker, because it's not a kingmaker, the new basically king, because Bulgaria is used to having a strong father figure on top. The fact that no one is close to getting there at the moment, even if Gerb returns to power, means that a positive change, competition of ideas, be they Bulgarianized ideas of governments, is taking place. And I really like this.
Yeah. Do you think at the moment there is, you talked about Russian interference. I mean, there's a live issue at the moment is Russian gas supplies to the Balkans. Is that an issue in this election campaign? Is that an example of, do you think, direct Russian interference in the election?
Well, yes and no. On the one hand, of course, it is an issue because people are already seeing their electricity bills skyrocket. Mm. On the other hand, the government is trying to neutralize all the possible attacks that it could come under because of the situation by speaking up for a position against Russia, speeding up too much the energy transition. And it says, of course, electricity bills are skyrocketing. This is just a telltale sign of what could happen if we are not really cautious when we are doing this energy transition. For example, right now the president maintains Bulgaria will try to delay the transition away from coal, just to make sure that the interests of Bulgarian workers are protected and that the energy mix allows for prices to be maintained at a low enough level. And just to add a really small remark, an example of the issue being really politicized is the fact that yesterday, amidst a small surge in the evening in the price of gas, you had the government, the state-owned gas operator announcing that the gas prices are going a bit down just 2 weeks ahead of the election.
Mm. In the previous show in this series, we looked at Greece, and one of the things we discussed there was the fact that you've got a country that, like Bulgaria, has the idea of a sort of a strong and stable figure at the top of the government is attractive. These are countries that whose democratic traditions are relatively recent. And therefore, do you think that in the situation you find yourself in a country like Bulgaria today is that if the voters think that the liberal democracy government style isn't delivering what they want, that they will could quite easily persuade you to go for something quite different, even if that meant departing from the sort of norms of democracy that we see across the rest of the EU?
My guess is that we wouldn't really go as far. There has been a debate as to whether one should move to, say, a presidential republic.
Yeah.
But I don't think it goes any more than that. Of course, there are people who are disenfranchised with the democratic process over the past 30 years, because what normally is called transition didn't spare many Bulgarians from economic turmoil, and the last 10 years brought some degree of stability to other Bulgarians, but it failed to boost the rule of law, it failed to boost democracy, it failed to make some of the necessary economic transformation so that we can move forward to a liberal democracy. Some of these things just didn't happen. We are yet to catch up. And some of the people who really are losing right now of the process, be it those who have been losing for 30 years from the transition, or who are now paying the price of reforms not yet made. Of course, they do want to return to the past. I'm not sure this is nostalgia per se. Perhaps in some cases it's nostalgia for people's youth. I think you could find this with the rise of populists in the middle of the last decade in many places around the world, especially in Europe and in the US too. The times where Europe was great, when America was great, etc., etc., even if this greatness wasn't as people imagine it. But I'm not sure this is a really a part of the mainstream debate. Yeah. I think a part of the mainstream debate has been this last year, rather the struggle of the elites, because people who are now coming to politics, some of, who are perhaps now come to the executive, some of them are new to politics, others are not that, that new, but many of them have not been in power over the past 10 years. And it is very likely that the next government is not made of the people who have been in power over the last 10 years. So the question is how we go about it. It's not a really always civilized debate. It's sometimes a very uncivil debate. But you could see people in their Bulgarian-style competition for attention, for what here is called ideas. You could see them trying to test the ground for some kind of a democratic debate. Maybe this will happen one day.
Yeah.
But just to conclude, it's I don't think this is about fundamentally doing away with democracy. Not at this point.
Yeah. And if there's a transition away from older elites or figures that have been dominant in Bulgarian politics to new faces, new voices, I mean, how would you characterize those voices? Are they political figures that have emerged from the margins or have emerged from the old Socialist Party, or do they represent something completely new?
Well, I must just add and correct myself a bit so that I don't sound very naive, because I hope I'm not being very naive. It will not be a complete transition. Mm. I mean, there have been figures more or less low profile, shadowy, who will perhaps stay in politics for long. But of course, there is, and some of those figures, you could clearly see that they have demonstrated that they won't be leaving politics. For example, if you remember former MP, Delian Peevski, who was also briefly head of the National Counterintelligence Agency, and is also a former media mogul. His appointment to the National Counterintelligence Agency prompted huge protests in 2013. He was sanctioned under the Magnitsky Act this year, and his name emerged in Pandora Papers. He was being phased out of politics hidden a bit.
Hello, Angela. I think we've lost you there.
This is a symbol of there will be interests that won't change for long. However, there are also people who seem to have a bit younger generation, maybe not more than 10 to 15 years younger than the current elite, which was in their really active age as communism collapsed, who perhaps will at least try to change something. Some of them were parts of previous governments.
Yeah.
They're not maybe completely clean, but there is some hope that the coming of new people will at least open up some space for change.
Yeah. Do you think is immigration a big part of the debate? We're seeing this right across Europe now in different, immigration affects different countries in different ways, but looking at potentially, as a consequence of the Afghanistan political crisis and the arrival of the Taliban in power, won't be long before we start seeing probably migrants arriving from Afghanistan once more. Is that a concern in this election about how Bulgaria, like other countries in Southeastern Europe, deals with this problem?
In my opinion, it's not a real concern. Not until the parties that have normally that decide to play this card, to play this tune, just activate it as a narrative. This normally happens when you have parties who are staunchly anti-migrant, anti-immigrant, and they organize protests in a certain village because they don't want migrants. But now these parties haven't been part of any of the two failed parliaments because they were below the barrier. They haven't been part of the caretaker government. And who knows, maybe in the next 2 weeks, they will try to heat up the debate again.
Yeah.
Of course, this is being asked as a question in TV studios. What shall we do about migration? But it's not a really high-profile topic at the moment. As I said, in those 2 weeks that are coming, that will be perhaps the most heated of the debate, because we are not really seeing at big debates the major parties that will make it into parliament just clash with one another. So who knows? It might end up being a part of the debate. It's just being discussed, but it's not really important yet.
Yeah. And a final question for me. I mean, Kalina mentioned at the beginning that the Socialist Party, seen as being linked and born out of the old Communist Party that ran Bulgaria, is seen as being closer to Russia and more pro-Russia. In other countries, what we see is not just Russian direct interference, but the Russians backing other voices that they think are helpful to their debate. And if the Russians are keen for a government in Bulgaria that's pro-Russia, maybe slightly anti-EU, or even sees its future away from the EU, do you think there's evidence of the Russians interfering in boosting the share of voice and support through social media for other actors in Russia, in Bulgaria rather?
Sorry, is this for me or for Kalina?
For you.
Okay. So I think yes. I think Russians are just have always been hedging their bets, and that whenever they decide to try someone new, they do it. A clear example of this was this Ataka party that, of course, was very prominent some years ago, and that openly speaks up for Russian positions. There were MPs of Ataka who went once, at least once or more, actually, to Syria, of course, under Assad, as the civil war was raging, together with BSP, with socialist lawmakers. And this party has been, for quite a while, has behaved as a mouthpiece of Russia. You could see over the past months, though, that its positions sometimes diverge from Russia's. It can even be critical towards Russia. And maybe this is just, I haven't looked deeply into this issue, but I would assume that this is partly because of Russia also extending a hand to this other Vozdravstvene party that I mentioned, which is very, very loudly anti-vax, very loudly anti-colonialism, whatever this means. Its MP candidates even claim falsely that Bulgaria is a colonial state. I mean, they pick people who don't really use the words properly, but it instills some kind of a respect in voters. They target specific voters, and they emit those messages that Ataka used to emit previously. So I believe that Russia is always playing with different actors. As some analysts, though, just to conclude this issue, as some analysts have been arguing over the years, I think the big problem with Bulgarian politics and Russia is that many parties, Russia can actually interact with many parties, it can interact with most of the parties, and they can really believe they could get something. Yeah. They needn't be far right, they needn't be a far left, they can be mainstream parties, they can be get party, and it believes that it could outsmart Russia. Maybe because we think that we know the Russian soul, we think we are not mere puppets. Maybe because other Balkan countries, such as Serbia, have been good at maneuvering, at least occasionally, we try to play this game with Russia. And this goes all across the political spectrum, not just Ataka, Socialist, Vozdravstvene, etc.
Yeah. Agil, thank you so much for that and for joining us. Kalina, are you still with us? Can you hear me still?
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah, that's great. Just before we close, I mean, looking ahead, I mean, Agil's given us a good insight into the issues that are going to be part of this presidential election in November this year. But looking further ahead, do you see this drift to social media and platforms like Facebook playing a more and more central role in political debate and mainstream media being more and more marginalized? Do you think this is a trend that is going to continue?
I think it really will depend what's the outcome of this election and what kind of parties come to form government and so on. If the country becomes a bit more stable, then maybe citizens will feel more inclined to trust the government and thus by extension also the mainstream media. Because as Angel pointed out, the two sets of messages are quite interconnected. Yes, I also think that, like everywhere else, younger people will turn more and more towards social media as ways of finding information as well as communicating. So Yeah, I mean, in a way, one interesting difference that I think parties in Bulgaria don't yet explore so much to its full extent, like we've seen in the UK around elections, is, yes, social media. So yeah. I think there is a lot more that parties can do in order to start not necessarily manipulating voters, but influencing their opinion and their voting ultimately.
Do you see, I mean, I said that was the final question, but I'll ask you one more quickly. Obviously, the European Union is looking to create legislation around the regulation of online platforms through the Digital Services Act. At some point, that will be translated into national legislation in Bulgaria. Is there a debate on these issues in Bulgaria about regulating technology? Do you think there's a consensus around that?
I think so far the main sort of direction in which governments are looking is towards the EU and, yes, the emerging code of practice and the Digital Services Act and related initiatives. I do think that what we did uncover in our research is the fact that these, for example, the code of practice, the reporting by the platforms is not individually segregated by country. So it's not very clear, for example, how much of the actions that they're taking in Bulgaria, for example, are they taking any actions or to what degree? So the numbers don't really reflect that. And a lot of the platforms are not really sufficiently covering Central and Eastern Europe in their efforts to counter disinformation and, protect democracy and so on.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, there is a lot of space there to improve the situation going forwards, both nationally, but also at EU level.
Yeah. And of course, probably, I mean, certainly looking at that, the sort of Balkans region of Europe probably require a much bigger investment from the tech companies in native language speakers to act as fact checkers and to identify harmful and illegal content as well.
Yes, absolutely. So if we compare the situation with the UK and the number of fact checkers that exist here in Bulgaria, Facebook has one partner, which is AFP, and that partner has one fact checker. So you have one person responsible for sort of policing the entire Facebook space of the country. Yeah. And somehow I don't think this is feasible.
Exactly. I think it's a very good point and an important point on which to end. Kalina Boncheva and Girl Petrov, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. You've been listening to the Infotagent podcast focused on Bulgaria, hosted by me, Damien Collins, with our guests, Kalina Boncheva and Angel Petrov. This show was produced by David Dargahi. You can find out more about Infotagent at our website, infotagent.com. And you can also support this series by becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/infotagentpodcast. All proceeds raised go towards the production of this show. Thank you. Until next time.